And good evening. New York celebrates the new year. Protesters in Baghdad withdraw from U.S. embassy, but tensions remain high. And Governor Cuomo meets with Jewish leaders in Brooklyn. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with some of the news for Wednesday, January 1st, 2020. Marking the new year in Times Square at midnight this morning. The city welcomed its first babies just as the clock struck 12. Aiden Zobnin at Brooklyn's Coney Island Hospital and Anthony Joseph Saraceno at Richmond University Medical Center on Staten Island won the coveted title of first babies of the year. As the babies greeted 2020, so did an estimated 1 million revelers crammed into the crossroads of the world. They watched the 13,000-pound, 12-foot diameter Waterford crystal ball make its 75-foot, one-minute drop, the tradition that began in 1907. A once-in-a-lifetime experience, the annual ball drop attracts visitors from all over the world. Security was tight. Thousands of NYPD officers, some armed with heavy weapons, were supported by special canine units with two types of explosive-sniffing dogs. They were joined by aviation and harbor units, and for the first time, drones flew over the crowd. The switch to start the ball sliding down its pole, perched on top of One Times Square, formerly the New York Times building, now was thrown by teachers and students, spotlighting efforts to combat climate change. They were tapped to press that button at 1 minute before the drop. In the final seconds, as the ball dropped, 3,000 pounds of confetti were poured onto the crowd. In the final few hours before the ball drop, the crowd was entertained by rap pop stars Post Malone, K-pop group BTS, country singer Sam Hunt, and singer-songwriter Alanis Morissette. And in New Jersey, New Year's Day was met with several traditional New York events.
Organizers and all of us attending tonight, I thank the administration and staff of MetLife Stadium for their utmost cooperation in assembling this enormous event. Rabbi, Torah unites us. Torah defines us. Tonight, we synthesize the two manifestations of Torah with a single event.
Thousands of Jewish people congregated to celebrate the reading of the entire Talmud in an event called Siyum HaShas. The Talmud is the body of Jewish civil and ceremonial law that contains discussion of Jewish, that Jews use to guide their every aspect of their life, especially in the Hasidic community. The New Year's Day event celebrated the completion of the reading of the 2,711-page Babylonian Talmud, a process that takes 7.5 years. Similar events have recently been held in major cities around the globe, such as Mexico City. The event happened under heavy security after recent anti-Semitic attacks that have happened in the area. The event was broadcast internationally, and New Jersey State Police said there were no reports of security issues or problems. One of the attacks that have Jewish people concerned was the Hanukkah stabbing that happened in Muncie, New York, about 30 miles north of the city. In that attack, five people were allegedly stabbed with an 18-inch machete by 37-year-old Grafton Thomas. He's been charged with five federal counts of obstructing the free exercise of religious beliefs by attempting to kill with a dangerous weapon. Thomas had recently used his phone to look up information on Hitler and the location of synagogues. His family says he has a history of mental illness. One of the five victims of the attack is 71-year-old Joseph Newman. His family released a statement today and a graphic photo showing severe head injuries. The machete used in the attack penetrated Newman's skull, the statement said, adding that Newman's right arm had been shattered. Earlier today, Governor Andrew Cuomo met with Orthodox Jewish community leaders in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
My father was governor before me. Today is the anniversary of his death. It's the 50-year anniversary of his death. And the relationship with the Orthodox community goes back to my father when I was a young man. So it's gone on for many, many decades, our relationship. And it's very important to me, it's important to my father, it's important to my whole family, and it's important to the whole family of New York. The whole family of New York. Everybody feels very upset and disturbed about what happened. And everybody stands in solidarity with you.
Thank you.
So I'm here today, not just for me. I'm here representing all the people of the state of New York who want to say they're sorry about the tragedy and they stand with you in total solidarity and love. Because that's who we are.
Thank you. Followed the governor's appearance over the last few days. Knows that it's not only words I'm standing in solidarity, but it is really proposed a lot of actions to make sure that people will think not twice, but three times if they are going to commit a hate crime. The governor is proposing rules and regulations not only take off the guns, because that's enough. You can commit crimes, hate crimes, even though it's not fatal, but a detrimental to the families, verbal or assault. And the governor is strengthening, looking to strengthen that hate crime provision to make sure that no community will have to go through what we have been going through. And you should feel safe. When you send your child to go to shul or you go to shul, you shouldn't be afraid what happened in Muncie. You shouldn't be afraid when we had the children coming home from school. And we hope that it's a new beginning, it's a new decade, and we're looking forward to really a safe, peaceful community being able to continue our religious traditions the way we had that generations. And I thank you for that.
Let me just, on what the rabbi said, because he's exactly right. It's not just standing in solidarity, which we do. It's taking actions to make you secure in your community. You see more police now, which we said we would do, and we're going to continue to do. I'm proposing a new law that I want them to pass in January. We're in January. When they come back in 1 week, the legislature comes back in 1 week, a domestic terrorism law. You know what happened in Muncie? It was terrorism. It was a hate crime and it was terrorism. When you attack people and you're trying to hurt or murder a large number of people because of their race or their religion, that is terrorism. It's domestic terrorism. Terrorist doesn't have to come on a plane. You can have a person in this country who is a terrorist, a domestic terrorist. That's what happened in Muncie. And we have to say, yes, we're not going to tolerate it. It was ignorant. It's anti-American. This country was founded on freedom of religion. George Washington went to a synagogue, worshipped with Jewish people. So it's ignorant, it's intolerant, it's also illegal. And we're going to enforce the law, and we're going to make sure the law is enforced. And you have my word on that.
Governor Andrew Cuomo meeting with leaders of the Orthodox Jewish community in Williamsburg. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In international news, in Iraq, paramilitary leaders ordered their supporters to leave the heavily fortified U.S. embassy in Baghdad. Protesters with Hezbollah flags were filmed withdrawing in their vehicles, some lingering behind at the scene of the clashes. Tear gas and stun grenades were reportedly fired again on Wednesday. By Wednesday evening, however, the U.S. military stated that all had departed. Protesters descended on Baghdad's American embassy on Tuesday, incensed by Sunday's U.S. airstrikes against an Iranian-backed Shiite militia. The crowd lit fires and pelted the embassy with stones. A contingent of U.S. Marines arrived on Tuesday night to secure the embassy. Washington has blamed Iran for orchestrating the embassy riots. Tehran denies all responsibility, with Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei telling Trump that, quote, your crimes in Iraq, Afghanistan have made nations hate you. Iraqi Prime Minister Abdel Abdul Mahdi called the U.S. airstrikes, quote, a vicious assault that will have dangerous consequences, but warned protesters against any aggression towards foreign embassies. And ahead of elections in March, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has requested parliamentary immunity from prosecution in multiple corruption cases hanging over him. Netanyahu slammed the corruption charges against him as being politically motivated and pushed by people with hidden motivations. On Tuesday, Israeli High Court judges rejected a petition filed by academics, former defense officials, and other public figures attempting to ban Netanyahu from seeking re-election. And thousands of nationalists in Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine, celebrated their new year with torchlight parades in honor of Stephen Bandera, a World War II nationalist regarded by modern Ukrainians as a hero and by Poles, Jews, and Russians as a war criminal. Yellow Ukrainian national flags mingled with red and black banners of the Bandera Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists and its armed wing, the Ukrainian Insurgent Army. The group is said to be responsible for the mass murder and persecution in what is today Western Ukraine during the last years of the Second World War. Carrying lit torches, marchers chanted slogans such as "Ukraine before everything," "Glory to Ukraine," "Death to enemies," and "Glory to Ukraine, glory to heroes." Reportedly, the slogans have become widely adopted since 2014, first by the ultranationalists and then by the government and military. Ukraine has been in a bloody conflict with pro-Russian separatists. That was at the heart of the phone call and contacts between the Trump administration and Ukraine that fueled the president's impeachment. Bandera's birthday, January 1st, has been a national holiday in Ukraine since 2019. His organization got its start agitating against Polish rule. Bandera emerged as a leader of a hardline faction in 1940, hoping to establish an independent Ukrainian state with the help of Nazi Germany. Germany arrested Bandera and held him in house arrest until 1944. Once free, Bandera switched his allegiance from the Nazis to the victorious Allies. Reportedly, he was killed in 1959 when a KGB assassin shot him with a cyanide-loaded dart. After Ukraine became independent in 1991, nationalists tried to establish Bandera as a national hero over objections from Russia, Poland, and Israel. And in local news, construction is scheduled to begin in March of the on the flood control project on the Lower East Side, known as the East Coastal Resiliency Project. A year ago, the $1.5 billion massive construction job was dropped on the mostly poor community, many living in NYCHA and cooperative housing in the area. The project would lift the nearly 60-acre park built in the 1930s by Robert Moses by nearly 10 feet. Joel Kupferman of the Environmental Law Justice, of the Environmental Justice Initiative opposes the plan and says a lawsuit may be necessary. He adds the city has sowed division to get its way.
When I first saw this plan, what alarmed me was that it was presented at the Smith Houses, which is NYCHA housing right above the Brooklyn Bridge in the East River. That's my client. So they presented this plan on grounds that the reconstruction that FEMA funded and that went to the state and the city took $56 million, and they had to do trenching. And this is important. Sometimes it's the little details that like cloud over some of the city council members. But they trenched and they left the soil open and up available for resuspension, which means when the winds come along, it's just going in. We found high levels of lead and 240 parts per million of arsenic, which is way off the charts. What's alarming is that we brought this up over and over again to the city health department, to DEC, DEP, and all these other agencies, and they wouldn't even come test, and they didn't even make the contractors that's getting federally funded cover up that soil. So, and we know that has an effect, that lead is going into these people's apartments. So we're back to the cars, and they discount this as legacy lead, like no one's responsible for it. And then the arsenic came from probably rat control programs, and the city health department wouldn't take. The city health department knows about it because it's part of their health program. And when we first called and the residents called at Smith and other NYCHA housing, the city health department said, "You are not in our jurisdiction. We can't come visit you. As a matter of fact, we're not even going to answer your 311 calls."
Because they don't want to pay the money.
Pay the money or take responsibility. 1 in 14 people in New York City live in NYCHA housing. So, you know, the federal monitor had to come over and take over basically some of the management of all these places because of the lead that was exposed in apartments. The kids are getting much exposure. They caught the city in NYCHA lying about lead testing. There was actually a booklet printed out to give into a lot of the NYCHA staff people how to fake inspections. So that's one thing. So just inspections is the city, which ties into all of this. The city is not inspecting the air that's out there and also any type of soil suspension or even the air monitoring.
This is going to wind up in court, and they're going to try and stop.
Well, it's going to end up in court, and it should end up in court. But we've gotten such bad deference on a lot of the judges that basically have gone along with the city's claims. So it's also a misuse of all of, not misuse of resources, but, I'm not going to comment on the law part. It's a definitely uphill battle. And I'm really more than disappointed. It's really frightening that if they're going to approve this, the city and the city council should take away any of their green labels on any of the things that they're doing. It's bad. And one of the problems is the city is not concerned about the amount of soil and the toxins that are in that soil that's going to go up into the air.
That's the soil they're going to bring.
They control it. If they cut down the trees the wrong way, they didn't cut down the trees. They did construction, cut down the trees, and no one from the city or the state stopped the bad contractor who got a $80 million fine before. They still paid him basically every dollar, to go forward with this stuff. So we're concerned that the soil, being removed, and then the new soil coming in, the city does not have a good control and has a really bad history of controlling construction. So we're concerned about particulate matter. Now, a lot of studies have come through in the last few months proving that particulate matter is in air pollution is one of the largest killers that are out there. And New York City continues to be suffering from the exposure all over the place. So it's not just the exposure of East River Park. It's all these other construction sites that are out there. The East River area, we got hit with, they're suffering from what's happening at the Con Ed plant, and that hasn't been put under control. And I think it's really important to point out that these council members pass aspirational laws, which basically is saying we're outlawing crime, we're outlawing pollution, and yet you have to look at the enforcement. That's where lawyers, tell their clients, don't worry, the city's not going to come after you. $1.5 billion is owed by contractors and builders in city fines, and the city hasn't collected. As, they just keep on letting these contracts and developers occur. In 2014, there was $1.5 billion uncollected fines, $200 million to DEP, and $200 million to the health department alone. So, which raises all these issues. It's like they tell us, don't worry, and that's what we are worried. And the Law Project, the group I had, has been involved in so many cases where we're just finding that the city doesn't want to know what's out there. A new study has shown that came out that nanoparticles, 2.5 is one size microns.
All right, so what are you going to do next? This is hopeless?
I don't think it's hopeless. They just, the groups have voiced concern. I think it's hopeless that city council, off the record, has told us that this is not a good plan and that they voted for it. City council won't even hire, inside staff to review, what's going on.
So it sounds hopeless. They won't do anything.
I think the only thing that's out there is that, heeding the word of all those people that have been on the streets, protesting.
You don't expect that.
Yeah, and it's just they make the connection or whatever. But it's just if we just look at all the approvals that the city is going on and fostering, I guess there is a little bit of hopelessness there.
And Joel Kupferman of the Environmental Justice Initiative. And finally,
it's about to begin.
. 2020 began in frigid fanfare for hundreds of people who braved the swim in the Atlantic Ocean during the annual Coney Island Polar Bear Club Plunge. Wearing Santa hats and other costumes, the swimmers took the 40-degree temperature in stride. The event dates to 1903 and raises money for various charities. Polar bear plunges were also held in North Beach, Maryland, Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, and Perth, Ontario. And And that's some of the news for Wednesday, January 1st, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry and engineered by Ken Gale. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Have a great and happy New Year.